The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
The AutJet Business Show is brought to you with the compliments of F-Stage. Let them bring your corporate event to life and make it unforgettable.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome. Can you believe it's Thursday night again? I'm David Zeidel. This is the AutJet Business Show. And tonight we have a special guest. It's Grace Harding. She's the global CEO of Ocean Basket and a transformation leader. And Grace, I'll come to you in a second. But before we get there, I always start with a little bit of a business story. And tonight's business story, I'm going to name it a quick story about how simple a 2-cent mint increased restaurant tips by 21%. So I found this restaurant story just because we have Grace in tonight. In 2002, psychologists ran an experiment in a New York restaurant to see whether a small unexpected gift would boost tips. And it did, but not for the reasons you think. When servers gave one mint, tips rose slightly. When they gave two mints, it jumped by 14%. But then the real magic happened in the third version. What would happen is the server would provide a mint, walk away, and then turn around and say to the guest, "I've got something special for you. You've been great. He has an extra mint just for you." And that made the tip skyrocket by 21%. It's the same number of mints that were going to be given out, but a completely different result. And the question is why? And it's because it's not just the candy. It's the feeling that the person felt that they were being valued, and it was that personal touch. And humans have this thing of, I hope I pronounce this word correctly, reciprocity, I think. How do I say it?
Reciprocity.
That's right. And when somebody does something thoughtful, you often feel like it's natural to want to give back. And the lesson is simple. People don't react to the size of the gift. They react to the feeling that's behind the gift. So whether you're in business, marketing, or leadership, look for your own what we call the mint moment. A small personal gesture that makes people and someone feel really appreciated. And that's where the real impact lies.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Orchard Business Show. And tonight we're about to talk to Grace Harding, the global CEO of Ocean Basket and a transformation leader. Grace is a remarkable leader whose career is grounded in passion, purpose, and a deep commitment to people. From her humble beginnings, including receiving Chev food stamps, spending time in Arcadia, and starting out as a shop assistant on the streets of Joburg, she built her way up through retail and marketing before establishing her own consultancy focused on human engagement and leadership development. In 2012, Grace joined Ocean Basket, and under her guidance as global CEO, the brand has evolved into an international seafood business with more than 185 restaurants across 16 different countries. She is known for a belief that leadership is not about hierarchy, but about connection, often saying that people skills are no longer the softest skills, they're the hardest skills ever. As a servant leader, Grace is dedicated to nurturing talent, redefining success, and demonstrating how clarity, resilience, and humanity can turn a local business into a global story. So this evening we'll be speaking about what it truly takes to win, how to take responsibility and fix your own mess, including lessons from the COVID era, and her evolving message on success and parenting. Grace is also the recent recipient of the Europcar Women in Leadership Award at the 2025 Investec Jewish Achievers Award, where she made headlines with a very memorable moment of a double-handed zap sign. So Grace, welcome. And just before we begin, please tell me exactly who were those zap signs aimed at and why?
Well, hi, thanks for having me on the show. It's such a privilege. I think it wasn't about who it was aimed at. I think it was also symbolic of my past. So to say to my doubtful self, perhaps, the self who was at King David, who had a really tough time, gosh, you know, you did it, Grace. You know, you didn't believe you could, and others didn't believe you could, but you did. And, I'm a bit strange and wild, but it's not aimed at a person. I think it's aimed at conquering a personal struggle that I struggled with for over 40 years.
So, and just embracing things. And I, for the first time I saw today, you took off your jacket and underneath on your arm, you've got an Ocean Basket tattoo. I mean, if that doesn't show commitment, where did this commitment come from? And in fact, let's get there, but let's take us back to the early days. So you said at school, you weren't the great student. You, as I said in the intro, there were some family issues and the Chev helped. Do you want to take us through those years initially?
So I'm a child born from a Sephardi mother and an Ashkenazi father. My father was a tradesman. He was not financially stable. So from a very, very young age, I was negotiating with sheriffs of the court to not take our furniture and TV when they knocked on the door. And there was many a time where I would go to Checkers Kilani with my mom or my dad with the food stamps from Checkers in Kilani. But my father was a fighter. The one thing, he got knocked down a million times, but he always stood up. And that's where I learned the trade. So I used to go with him to work. It was my best thing to do. Maybe that's why I'm a workaholic today. During the holidays, we'd go and we'd first start off with some tea and anchovy toast. And then we'd go to the Oriental Plaza and he'd take all the goods out of his boot. And I would watch him sell these wares to the stores. And my mother was often in hospital. I also grew up between Tara and Wits because she was a student, a very clever woman, spoke seven languages, but struggled in life. Her father committed suicide in Egypt. He jumped from a courtroom window because he was caught spying for Mussolini. He had an Italian passport. So all these things came into play, but I was very lucky. I was blessed to grow up with French and Greek. My grandmother was a Greek Jew from Thessalonica, and there's still family on Rhodes Island. And I was never good at school. And what I learned when I had children is emotional problems give learning difficulties. And I was allowed to give up maths at the age of 15, which was the worst thing ever. It's taken me years and years to feel confident in front of a balance sheet and an income statement. So that was my early life. But I always had a dream. I've never seen the dark side only. I've always seen the opportunity in things. And perhaps because of my struggles, I have deep, 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 deep empathy for people who do struggle. And I understand it really well. And I think because I was surrounded with such diverse people with illnesses, mental illnesses, a father who didn't always pay for stuff, I had to learn to survive and to juggle this with sincerity. And I've always been very determined not to be a gunner and not to be sick in my head. So I don't steal. I lie sometimes, and I take tablets.
And you're completely honest, which is amazing. And so do you feel like struggles that you have when you're younger is, in fact, at the time it seems disastrous, but that's really what makes you strong? Do you feel like that has helped you in your career going forward?
Well, it has, because that's been my journey. And we've all been reading, I'm sure, a lot about parenting in the modern age. And there's speakers like Gary Vee, who's a little bit wild, but he's really great to listen to. Gabor Mate, who's incredible. And I look at my children, who are now 24 and 22, who are incredible and I adore. They haven't struggled, have they? So what is the impact of that? And I think every generation has a different impact on their children, and then there's the next generation. But our children struggle in different ways. So yes, thank God, my children didn't have to negotiate with the sheriff of the court when they were 14, but they've had their own struggles. So I think in our generation, of course, we have seen that the struggles have molded us. I mean, look at everybody. Look at Stephen Kosoff, who came from Benoni. Look at Richard Branson. There's so many stories like that. And then some of the Jews, like an Adrian Gore, who was always highly educated. But every generation has its struggles. My struggles were not more relevant or more sad than the struggles that 18-year-olds face today. But all of our lives mold us, whatever they are. Mm.
And before you joined Ocean Basket, what were you doing before that?
So when I left the Edgars Group in 98, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I always wanted to be a leader. I've been very lucky since a very young age. I knew I wanted to be a leader. And I also wanted to disrupt the world of work. So at Edgars, it irritated me that there was reserved parking for executives. And one day the director screamed at me because I changed the way the fashion briefings were happening with the marketing team. And I just started doing general work. That's actually when I met Fats Lazaridis. And that's one of the reasons I have a tattoo, is he was the first guy who truly saw the potential in me.
And he is the...
He's the founder of Ocean Basket, together with his brother. And so I started a business, and the stuff that I did for people, all sorts of brands, big brands, small brands, was how to connect your strategy to what you want your people to do. So it's all about leadership, strategy, and engagement. So it's a little bit like turning HR on its head.
So we're going to come back to this HR on its head, but we'll do it after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, We deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact Avstage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Orchard Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and together we're talking to Grace Harding. And Grace is the global CEO of Ocean Basket. And also, she said in her title, I need to say transformation leader. And that's what she's talking about at the moment. And we'll get onto this, the Ocean Basket story, a little bit later. But just before the break, you said you're going to be, you turned HR on its head. And I think that would be related to the transformation leader. Can you just discuss that a little bit more in detail for us?
Well, first of all, humans aren't resources. They are people. So we shouldn't be calling HR HR. So it doesn't make sense to continue to work in as we did in the industrial age. And there's been very little evolution. It's starting to truly evolve now. But if you look at the people practices since the industrial revolution, it was all about a bunch of people controlling the activities and the behaviors of another bunch of people. And in this day and age, it is critical for people to solve their own problems and to come up with solutions. But yet the entire system of society is still training us to listen and to obey and to implement. So this thought I had many, many years ago, and I was probably lucky to get a job at Ocean Basket, because I don't know how long people would have listened to me for, which was a bit weird, sort of 20 years ago, where I said, how do we first of all teach people to take accountability for their careers? And how do we work with employers to not see their people as a bunch of assets who just make stuff happen for them and work under them? Nobody works under anybody. People work together. And only now are you starting to see the shifts, but it's got to change from school. So I have bad memories of school. And funnily enough, I love working with schools now. When schools phoned me, Yeshiva phoned me the other day and said, will I come and speak? I get so excited, because there's the opportunity. Mm. We are taught to win alone. We are taught to strive for rewards. We are taught to be the top of our class. But what does that mean? Because the only way to succeed is through teamwork and through leveraging strengths from diverse people. So education has to change. The way we teach people has to change, and the way we structure people in companies has to change, because otherwise you are leveraging 2% of the brains and everybody else is just waiting for an instruction. That's expensive manpower.
And then what did Fat see in you that where you said you don't know, you could, didn't know an income statement, you don't know a balance sheet, and then he brings you in to run the company. What happened there?
So I often ask Fats that question. I think Fats, first of all, he also struggled through school. He left school eventually at the age of 15 because he said he didn't need to study geography. He would get a travel agent if he wanted to go somewhere. But he was a 100% math student. So I think what Fats probably saw in me is determination. He calls me a warrior. Not a warrior that I worry, a warrior like Braveheart. And I think what he saw is the curiosity. So, and my ability to work with people, my comfort with transformation, reorganizing systems. And then he said, okay, I'll teach you the rest. And it's been about 13, 14 years now. And there have been days where I wanted to run away because I was so lost and confused. But he never gave up on my abilities. And I've never given up on Ocean Basket. And it's the most incredible story. And I'm very blessed that Fats and his brother and his mother are not just these people who started a brand. They have become family. And his mom is like a grandmother, a yaya, to my children, and that's what they never had before. So I guess that's what the tattoo symbolizes. It symbolizes gratitude for an opportunity which I would have never imagined, but I always wanted.
Just talking about the grandmother, I actually remember coming to the Ocean Basket offices maybe 10 years ago and having the biscuits that she actually made.
Yes.
So she herself made the biscuits for Ocean Basket.
Well, those biscuits are just gifts. We don't supply them in the restaurants because she can't bake with her five people at such volume. She's still alive. She's still baking. I brought you some of her biscuits.
Thank you.
Both of you. She's 91, and she's an absolute inspiration. So Ocean Basket is very personal for me. I feel very accountable, not only to the shareholders, to the staff around the world, to the franchisees who invest in this brand. I mean, I wake up every morning and I think, oh my gosh, are they going to make enough money? Is it relevant? Are the customers going to be okay? Is our seafood going to be fresh? So business is personal. I don't understand the old adage of leave your problems at home.
Hmm.
It's all one.
And when you joined, how many countries? Was it only in South Africa at the time? And how many different stores did you have? Do you remember?
So when I joined, there were 147 restaurants. And in those days, I think it was three or four countries. And it grew past 185. COVID obviously had a huge impact on us. But we're very blessed that it is a very transportable brand. It is so unique. Quite difficult to take pizza or burgers or steak out of South Africa and take it elsewhere, whereas ours is so unique. It's very focused, and we've got restaurants in places like Kazakhstan, which I've been to, and Cyprus or Mauritius and Nigeria. So the diversity has been incredible, and one of the things I love about my job is that I've traveled to about 20 countries. And the diversity of people and the knowledge I've gained. People ask me, what is my hobby? And I always say my hobby is to learn. So I'm very blessed that I get paid to do what I love.
Well, that's incredible. And then if I want to take you back a little bit, and then we'll look at the different places.
Mm.
But when you came in initially, like, what was your thought process, and how did you go about bringing in your transformation? And did you change the culture of the company, or was it like that to start with?
So when I joined, the first at least 4 or 5 years, Fats was right by my side, because the level of disruption was massive. You must remember, this business was started by wild, crazy entrepreneurs. So by the time I arrived at the head office in Midrand, there were poker tables in the training room, and they were having braais on a Saturday, and there were only a small bunch of executives having lunch alone. And then I asked where the rest of the people had lunch, and no one knew. And I've always been a little bit of a everything's equal for everyone type of person, and so is Fats. So he wanted to transform the company. He didn't want this hierarchy and all of this to be in existence. But he had to guide me. It was extremely traumatic. It really was. I mean, there were days where the one day I arrived at work, we still had our own warehouse and distribution center, and the guys just wouldn't work. And it was orchestrated because people saw that I was disrupting. I painted all the walls white. I removed the booze from the offices. It was a madhouse, but a successful, dynamic brand. Fats knew that he had to hold on to the core of the culture, but introduce professionalism. So I hate to say we're corporate. We're definitely not corporate. We allow people to gate crash Exco. We don't have reserved parking, and we don't eat in different places. But the level of disruption was massive. And in the first 4 years, over 100 people did leave the company. So it was almost like together, we started from scratch. We had to completely turn this machine around. No investment in technology. It was the Wild West, but it was so powerful and it was so loved. So the love for the brand and the passion for the brand and the uniqueness of the brand remained intact. And that's a huge responsibility that I had, was not to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
And how do you go about doing that? Because You said it took like 4 years. How do you maintain that faith of I'm doing the right thing? Often people try to make a change and then things don't go right. And then how do you still believe in yourself?
Well, there are definitely times where you doubt yourself. I mean, I definitely had many days where I would say to Fats, gee whiz, I don't know, am I the right one to do this? And I don't want to sound like a business textbook, but if you are absolutely clear on your vision, absolutely clear, and it is meaningful and it resonates with who you are. So, for example, I probably wouldn't be able to work for, I don't know, a casino. And I don't have any problem with casinos, but it doesn't resonate with who I am. So I think number one, to have clarity of vision, and it must resonate with your values. To have a plan, and then to have these small measurable steps that get you from A to B. And it is about perseverance. I mean, everyone talks about grit and adaptability, and those have become the new things. If you read what are the skills you need for the future, I'm preparing for a business update with my colleagues on Monday. And it is. It's the ability to adapt. But to adapt, you need EQ, which means you have to be able to say, I don't know, or I messed up. So, you know, in addition to the awards, I've been given a scholarship to the Henley Business School, which I can't believe because I scraped through school. And the thing that is the blessing is that I'm able to say, I don't know. So then people come and they help you. So you must continue to learn. You must be clear. I think to also accept that the road won't be straight. There will be thorns. And there will be boulders, and there will be floods, and you will have to rent Noah's Ark, like we nearly had to do here in Joburg the other night. But it's about eye on the prize. I mean, let's look at rugby. Let's look at anything. I mean, I'm a massive fan of Rassi. And if you watch where he's taken us from, any business, anyone you interview in this seat, from me to an amazing leader like the big Jewish leaders we have in this country, they're all going to tell you the same thing. You've got to know what you want. You've got to be prepared to learn. And when things fail, don't lambaste people, because it is only through the failures that you find the gaps, as painful as they are. And they are terribly painful.
So I want to go to one of those painful moments and those gaps that you talk about. Because before, when we were talking, you mentioned how you made some mistakes when COVID hit. Mm. Do you want to take us through what those mistakes were and how did you overcome them?
So during COVID, I think that the work that Ocean Basket did was incredible for the restaurant industry. We handed out operations manuals. We ran online training for any restaurant to attend. And it really galvanized the industry. The restaurant industry is closer today because of COVID. So that was a good thing. Post-COVID, what I didn't realize is how our muscle for protection and for cost containment overpowered the importance of looking to the future. So for 1 or 2 years after COVID, the language in the business did not shift as quickly as it should. So we were still talking saving, cost containment, and we were not balancing those messages with opportunity, next opportunity, and growth. And for 1 or 2 years, that was really not good for the business. And that's where having a great leader who is honest with you and will make you cry, because you need to cry, and to wake up and say, goodness, the muscles are imbalanced here. And at the end of last year, in the middle of 2024, we realized that. And we quickly pivoted, got some new people on board. And now the brand this year has performed more than 16% higher than last year, which is unheard of. And it just goes to show that when you lose focus, or when you become too focused on one thing and you don't listen. So I didn't listen to the right messages. And the reason I didn't listen is I believed that I was still protecting. So I had to give myself some feedback, and Fats had to give me a lot of feedback. And we realized it, and together with my team, we switched it. And I'm very blessed to have an incredible team of executives who work with me. I'm so blessed.
And then do you, when you expand worldwide, so what's the reason for expanding to so many different countries?
Oh, that's a good question. It probably isn't the best thing, actually. So hindsight is an exact science. You know, we've gone everywhere from Nigeria to Namibia, from Namibia to Kazakhstan. It does feel a bit haphazard. For a long time, the expansion strategy was people who would come to us. They would go to our restaurant in Cyprus. We have 9 restaurants in Cyprus. We own those. Or they would go to Cape Town and they'd say, oh, we want this brand. And that's how we grew. People experienced us. And that's why you see this higgledy-piggledy mix of countries. Having said that, what we learned from that is how exportable and adaptable we are. And now the next step of international expansion has far more focus and strategic deliberation included in it. So yes, it is a bit higgledy-piggledy, and we've learned a hell of a lot. We've learned that you can go to a country like Kazakhstan, which doesn't eat seafood, it's landlocked. Their main source of meat is actually horse meat. Ugh. And we have 7, I think we opened an 8th one the other day, 8 restaurants there. So it needs to be more streamlined. It's something that we are changing, but we know we've got an incredible offering with an incredible opportunity to take seafood that's incredible value for money. And no one's done that.
And when you got this, all the seafood that you're giving to a landlocked place, or even, you told me earlier, even in South Africa, most of the stuff is imported. Yeah. So you're sitting in Cape Town and eating imported fish, and now you would think that would push the prices through the roof, but your restaurant is very well or reasonably priced. It's good value for what you get.
That was the dream. So you spoke about how do you stay focused. The one thing I've learned from Fats is he had a dream from a very young age, and that is, why must only rich people enjoy fancy seafood? Why can't it be accessible to everybody? So with that in mind, the business model was built in that way. It is crazy that the hake is exported, but people are chasing euros and dollars. So we source from about 23 countries, and it's the whole model. You know, we buy right, we go direct to the source, the relationship we have with suppliers. Seafood is a commodity. It's really difficult to be in stock all the time at the right price. And if I had to explain how, it would take a couple of hours. But if you've got a dream in mind or a purpose or an objective, you work with that objective and you say, right, more of this, less of that. How do you model it? How do you build the restaurants? How many tables do you need? So we work through the entire business model to get to that net profit. And then you're working up and down the whole time.
So I want to get to how do you model it and what is the net profit in terms of how do you work that up beforehand? So you want to open up a restaurant. Mm. What do you go through in your mind beforehand? And then on top of that, you mentioned some of the stores are franchised and some are owned. What's the key difference between that? But we need to do that after the break.
Okay.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel. And if you're wondering who we're talking to, it's Grace Harding, the global CEO of Ocean Basket. And some of the things that she said is, First of all, that humans are not resources. So the whole HR concept of human resources is incorrect. We are people, and you need to work together with people. And working as a team is the strength that you need to work on and with. And then Grace said that you need a clear vision of where you want to go, what you want to achieve. You got to do what resonates with you. And who you are and what your values are have to come through the work that you're doing. And then the last thing she said is you got to be prepared to learn. And I think nothing shows it more than you were given the opportunity to do an MBA at Henley Business School. And you said at school you didn't achieve well, and now you're going and doing an MBA. And you could say, I'm the CEO of a company, what do I need to go and learn? But you're learning. How long have you been doing that for?
Since the 1st of October, it's been terrifying. And I cannot tell you how much I love it. The days that I know I've got to book 3 days and go there, I feel like a child who's going to a playground, because the diversity of the people and the things that I'm learning, and of course now that I've worked for so many years, the theory is applicable now, so it makes so much more sense. But I'm not only learning finance or processes or things like that. I'm learning about South Africa. I'm hanging out with people who are no older than 40-something. I mean, I'm everyone's boba in that class. And I'm absolutely loving it, and the privilege to be exposed to a global business school with the most incredible quality coaches and lecturers. I was telling them today, in fact, that if school had all these coaches and support, I may have done well. And I don't know why it's not like that, because by accepting help shows that, you know, you have an ability to do bigger and greater things. And it's wonderful. I mean, I drive those coaches crazy.
But it's interesting that you say that, because you started off at the beginning of the interview talking about how we must change the school system. And this is maybe a model for the school system,
yes,
that people can grow. And just before we went for the break, I asked you about the model for the business. And I asked you about why some franchise owned. And just talk us through when you're looking to start a new restaurant somewhere. Talk us through the process of what goes through your mind to decide, are you going to do it or not?
So, I mean, first of all, the business model. So some restaurant businesses, Nando's, Robbie's my hero. They will have some company owned and some franchised. Ocean Basket, it's all franchised in South Africa. The only company owned restaurants are Cyprus, but the principles are the same. So many, many years ago, you would net 25% in the restaurant industry because it was a different world and SARS wasn't everywhere. You know, there was lots of cash around. It was a different industry. What do we do now?
I just want to stop you there, just for the listeners who don't understand what you net 25%. That means that of your turnover,
yes,
what you sell, 25% of that is your profit.
Yeah. And 25%
after all the expenses,
everything.
And everything.
Right. And that was incredible. Now in the industry, it depends, you know, but we aim for between 12 and 15%. And it's everything above the GP line and everything under. So what do we look at? We look at, obviously, the environment, site selection. It's no different to any business. It's always got to start off with, where are the people who you can serve and what are the solutions you're going to give them? Whether it's medical aid, whether it's food, you're solving problems. You're giving people something they need in their life. So it's everything from the number of seats. You know, so if you are going to have a restaurant, we've got a restaurant, let's say, in Belito. It's not in a traffic area. It's not in a mall. So that model is different because it's holiday. It's a destination model. You can only go into a destination site once people know you. But the way the brand was built was in high traffic areas, like the big shopping centers. And that's still our model today. So those are the things you need to consider. What's the labor cost going to be? One of the mistakes we've made going internationally in some countries is the labor has just been too expensive. The cost of people has just been so expensive. And that's just some of the failures that we've had. So it's balancing everything, like any business. What are the controllable costs and what aren't? And where's the best environment to provide your offering to the people around you? How often will they come? How much could they spend? And then you do the maths.
And if somebody is listening and they think, hey, that's a great idea, I want to open up an ocean basket.
Mm.
And it sounds like in the beginning, you kind of, it was like anyone who invited you to a dance, you danced
yes.
with them.
Yes.
What is the process now? What do you look for in somebody who's going to open up a restaurant? Because they're carrying your name.
So the franchise model is a very interesting one, and that's a whole program in itself, because I've only learned it at Ocean Baskets in the last 14 odd years. The first thing I would say is think carefully, do you really want to be a franchisee? Because a franchisee means that you got to come and sing our song the way we say, with the clothes we say it, in the tune we say it. And very, very often people think franchising is like autopilot, and it isn't. Yes, we build the aeroplane, we put the seats, we get the passengers on board for you. But if you're not in that cockpit, and if you're not walking up and down to check on your passengers, you will fail. So the first thing I want to say is, if you believe that you're a great business person and you know how to do it better, don't get a franchise, because you will hate it. Because we will drive you mad about everything, because we're protecting a brand for the benefit of everyone. The second thing is, it works for people because the recipe is there. So what do we look for? We look for people who have a natural affiliation to hospitality. So the model has changed a lot, because many, many years ago, you could own one restaurant. It's more profitable now to have two or three restaurants. So it's more difficult. You need a guy or a girl who's got investment money and who wants to run a business and who wants to be a leader and who wants to serve.
Wow. So I want to ask you just your secrets to success in terms of, and she's pulling a face at me when I ask it. Just if you had to talk to the Grace of 20 years ago, what would you tell yourself of how to be successful in business and in life in general? But we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Let AvStage make your vision a reality. As your trusted technical partner, we deliver top-tier lighting, cameras, sound, visuals, and all technical elements for high-level corporate events, conferences, gala awards, ceremonies, and year-end functions. Elevate your next event with our expert services. Contact AvStage at 011-887-1400 and let us bring your event to life and make it unforgettable.
Welcome back. I'm David Zeidel. You're listening to the AutJet Business Show, and we talking to Grace Harding, who's giving us unbelievable insights, first into the business world of running restaurants, but also into the human world and humans. But just before the break, I asked you the question, what are some of the lessons of life that you, if you now the teacher at the Henley Business School, and you now telling people, and you're running the MBA class, and you're telling them, what should they know about business specifically, but life in general? What are the three or four lessons you could give them?
I think what I've told myself and people my whole life is stay humble, be curious, never, ever, ever give up. And that's what I learned in my childhood. I never gave up. I never cried in Arcadia, and I'm not saying it's bad to cry. But I could always see beyond that. I always could see beyond that. And I truly understand the word grit. I really do. My Fats often says to me, I'm pliable, flexible, and unbreakable. And I love those three, because you've got to be flexible. You've got to listen. And you've got to admit when you're wrong. You've got to say, I messed up. Acknowledge your people. Care. You've got to give a shit. You've got to care deeply, deeply, deeply about the customer, about the money she's giving you, about your people. When they get sick, I take them chicken soup, the ones who get sick in Joburg. I worry if they're ill. And it's just, I don't know. You just got to care, work hard, say I don't know, get up, add value. Got to add value. Add value. Serve people. Put others first. I always say to people, if you live by the mantra of it's not about me, if I make sure that whatever I do for you, that's why today, I mean, I don't just rock up for an interview. I rock up, we bring you food, and that's who I am, and that's who Ocean Basket is, and that's who the founders are. And they are loved for that reason.
So it's interesting, because I always worry, like, the interview goes so quickly, and I get upset when it's over. But now I can see through the window all the sushi that Grace has brought us, and I'm waiting for that. And I hope my kids are not listening to the interview, because they went to camp today. They left for camp today.
They must go to Hartenbos.
And they love sushi, and now I'm coming home
with
some sushi.
Which camp is it?
It's the Nea Kiva camp.
Yeah, near Hartenbos in the Cape.
Yes.
Yes.
So.
Tell me when they want to go. Tell me when they all want to go to Ocean Basket.
They'll have to go with the whole campsite. They can't go on their own.
Cool.
So, Grace, has anyone ever said you like bamboo? Because when you were describing yourself about being flexible but having grit and being strong, bamboo can survive hurricanes because it can bend so much.
I didn't know.
And as you were describing, that was the thought that was going through
my
mind.
I appreciate that.
So we're heading towards the end of the interview, and I'm heading towards supper. And one of the things that Grace has ended off with saying is stay humble. Never give up, and that means have grit. But above all that, I get the sense of what you're saying is acknowledge people, and those people are both the people working for you and for your customers. Is there any last words that you want to add to that?
No, thanks for having me. This is super cool. It's always strange to speak your thoughts out loud, but I truly appreciate it, and I'm very blessed to be part of this incredible community, because from food stamps to an amazing award, and now being on this show with you, it's been a fantastic few months. Thank you so, so much, everyone.
And we arranged this talk, funny enough, before you won the award.
Yes.
And so to the Eurocar Women in Leadership, Grace Harding, CEO of Ocean Basket and a transformation leader. Thank you very much. I'm David Zeidel. This has been the Orchard Business Show.